Hi, and welcome to MR Explorer. My name is Z Johnson, and I am going to be talking about my experience at Converge by the Insights Association in Los Angeles, California, December 4th and 5th. I'm going to take a moment here just to mention the fact that I had this about halfway done when I realized that I hadn't actually hit record. So in the world of recording, some of your stuff ends up with, you can have it armed, which means that it's ready to record and you can help use that for your sound tests and sound check. But you have to hit that record button a second time, at least on the device that I have. And I didn't hit record the second time. So even though none of you have heard everything that I said for the past 15 minutes, it's all a second pass through. So here we go. Take two, at least for me, talking about Insights Association Converge Conference in Los Angeles. So what I'm going to do here is there were a lot of talks that happened over 2 days at this conference. It was a fairly small gathering, which was actually really nice because we got to know a lot of people, we got to know each other well, and we got to hear a lot of information. So for this episode, what I want to do is just go through each of the talks, give a little summary from my perspective of what those talks were about. In a future episode, I will talk more in depth about some of the themes and some of the takeaways that I got. You'll hear a couple of those sprinkled throughout just because I can't help myself when I get talking about these things. But for the most part, I'm going to keep it to what is it that was discussed by each of the speakers, and we'll just go from there. All right, so Converge. Day numero uno, the first day. We were able to have the conference kicked off by Camille Nasita and Sarah Taraf from Gongos. And their talk was really awesome in terms of setting the stage for what we were going to be hearing about for the next 2 days. And that was convergence in the sense of how we were approaching it and we were discussing it, was talking about the convergence of data analytics and traditional market research, where we're seeing these two disciplines working together a lot more and pairing up together to provide richer, deeper insights to our stakeholders. It also involves bringing a lot more people along the process, whether that is a data scientist being paired with a traditional market researcher, or even bringing in some of your decision makers along on the process, along the insights journey, along the product planning process. Maybe you have a finance person there, but having other people who typically have not been included in the discussion, bringing them into those discussions and using some of the same tactics that are used in the way that we work on product planning and insights for our customers to deal with our internal stakeholders. For example, taking a look and stepping back to understand what information is needed, how is it needing to be delivered, when does it need to be delivered, and who does it need to be delivered to? Sometimes we do a better job of working with our customers in terms of parsing those things out and being able to deliver something very well to our customers and not necessarily doing the same job with our internal stakeholders or internal clients, insights clients. Next, we heard from Melanie Courtwright from ResearchNow SSI. And she shared a preview into the findings that are going to be published in a ResearchNow SSI Global Consumer Trends Report. I think she said that it's going to be delivered in January 2019. It's going to be free for download. And it's going to be a collection of the insights that they have accumulated from their panel and the research that they have done. Some of the things that she shared were surprising to the audience, which I particularly enjoyed because as a older millennial, a lot of the things that she was sharing were about millennials and they resonated with me, but were surprising to many others in the audience. And I'll give you one example. One was that if you look at the percentage of time being spent watching TV, it actually is fairly in line for millennials as it is for baby boomers and Gen Xers. It's not that much different. What is different is that the overall set of media that is being consumed by millennials is larger. So it's not only including TV, it's also including online, social media, streaming online, videos online, YouTube, etc., and not just TV, radio, and whatnot. So there is a lot more that is being digested by millennials, but of that group, of that set of media consumption, the portion that is TV still holds the same or fairly similar. She also talked about asking what younger respondents wanted in order for them to feel more likely to share information with researchers. And what she found was, not surprising, they want more control over what information they share with researchers and how to share that information. So again, like I said, not that surprising if you've been in this space at all long, but still something worth noting. Next, we heard from Chris Robson from DeckChair Data, and his talk was about the two disciplines merging and what is needed when two disciplines merge, in particular data science and traditional market research. But I love that he took this and you can apply it to really any two disciplines merging together, which I know has taken place in the past with things like biologists and computer science. Now you have computational biology. There are many disciplines that have merged, but the things that he talked about were things like understanding how the other discipline's culture, what is part of that other discipline's culture. An example he gave is software developers tend to have lots of stickers on their laptops. That might not be something that market researchers tend to do. But understanding those little pieces about the other discipline with whom you are merging is going to help you be able to work together better. I think that holds true for pretty much any two groups coming together, is if we can understand each other better, we will then get along better and we will be able to work better together. As part of this, he talked about the tendency of market research teams to exhibit some anxiety in this world of more data and different ways of analyzing data and combining data, and the tendency that there can be by market research teams to suddenly come up with these job descriptions that really make no sense in the data science world. Asking for 10 years of experience on a technology or a methodology that really has only been in existence for 3 or 4 years. So how do we remedy that? Well, according to Chris, you slow down, you review or create a data strategy that rolls up to the rest of your company's strategy, and then decide what skills are needed, and then go out to hire for those skills. So that way you can avoid the job descriptions that are just listing buzzwords and, as he said, scream to the data science group. These people have no clue what they're doing. All right, next talk, Erlene Biggs from Icon Place. So one of the things that Erlene talked about was a project that Icon worked on where a company needed to put together a data platform to be able to combine a bunch of data streams together. And the thing that I found interesting was, instead of taking any one of those existing data platforms, they actually ended up creating a new data platform. And the reason they did that is because they looked at what the customer or user needs were going to be from that data platform, realized that none of the existing platforms were actually going to serve that purpose. And so it was going to be better for them to really start from scratch and create something that was going to meet those user needs. Next came Marian Anderson from Microsoft. And full disclosure, Marian is my manager. She's also phenomenal. And I'm not just saying that because she's my manager. But she talked about Microsoft's journey in digital transformation. And this is Microsoft's customer and market research team. And the path that we are taking to being able to do this convergence of pulling in more data science, pulling together diverse data streams that haven't necessarily been pulled together before, supplementing that with traditional market research methodologies so that we can create deeper, richer, even faster insights. And some of the things she talked about were similar to what we had heard earlier, and that was slow down now to speed up later. It can be hard because time is such a barrier. No matter what discipline you're in, either data science or market research, you are dealing with customers that want answers very quickly, and it can be hard to slow down during those times to try to establish new methodologies or figure out how to bring pieces together to make a better story. But it's something that needs to happen if we are going to work well together long term and make this even work long term. We also, she said, need to get comfortable getting uncomfortable as market research. And that just, we have traditionally really been interested in the perfect methodology and very good research. And that's not to say that we shouldn't strive for those things. But as we keep moving forward, we're going to need to realize that as we create these data platforms that serve up information to our customers, it's going to require that we release some of the control of the data that we have had in the past. The question was asked, what about when someone comes to you and wants to have a focus group done? And the response was, well, let's go back to the business question. Let's see what is it that your business question is, what are your needs? And then we can figure out what methodology is going to work best for your business question. Maybe it is focus groups, but perhaps it's not. And it is our responsibility to be able to have those discussions and make that call and push for those correct methodologies to be applied to the business questions. Next, we got to hear from Carol Haney from Qualtrics. So Carol was talking about stop chasing the one number. And by one number, she actually was talking about single metric. So for example, don't try to describe your entire population, your customer audience, based on a single satisfaction score or a single NPS score or a single loyalty score or any one of those single metrics, because customers are complicated people. They're people, which means they're complicated. And so she talked about using, instead of a single score, using a composite score. Take a look across the customer journey, look at the metrics that apply at each stage, put together a composite score that takes into account each of those metrics, and be smart about how you're doing that as well. So look at the behavior that is desired. Look at what things actually make that behavior change and use those items to comprise your composite metric. I honestly, this is a side note, my opinion here. I feel like this is actually something that many of us have already been moving towards and been doing, especially as behavioral economics has been coming forward, has been more present in conversations, as we have been acknowledging that we need to have deeper, richer insights. Part of that is acknowledging the fact that humans are complicated creatures and it's difficult for us to understand the why behind everything and that we can't just use a single number. But it was still a good reminder. Next, we heard from Anise Merchant from Course 5 and Boonmi, and I forgot to get the last name. I'm sorry, Boonmi, if you're listening, but he works at PepsiCo. And what they talked about was PepsiCo's, a particular division of PepsiCo that Boonmi works for, and their journey with forecasting and how forecasting was becoming unreliable because our, meaning individuals, interactions with brands and products are changing. And so it was time for them to re-examine and reconstruct a data strategy and then use new and multiple research methods in order for them to create forecasting that actually was more accurate, more actionable as a result. And so some of that was taking passive information along with research and being able to create that that view of what was happening so that the forecast could actually happen better. After Anise and Bunmi, we listened to Dr. Rekha Daniel Weiner from Distillery, and she talked about this shift from asking who is my customer to asking what makes my customers stand out from everyone else, or as she put it, what makes my customers special? And then using passive data to get the answer instead of always using surveys. For example, she talked about using search data and how much information you can actually glean from search data about a person's journey, a person's interests, and which was actually echoing something that Bunmi had also said. And I loved his quote, which was, "Search provides a window to the soul." And everyone kind of laughed at that who had been involved in reviewing search terms and search results kinds of stuff. But it seems, and I personally haven't, but I can see how that would be true because we are so inclined to immediately, when something strikes our mind or we're curious about something, we're in a conversation and something comes up, how often is it that we immediately go and search for that topic and try to find information on it? But I really liked the fact that she was talking about that shift from who is my customer to what makes my customer special, and the fact that there is so much more that we can be learning about our customers because of the wealth of information that we do have at our disposal. After Rekha, we listened to Haley Quate from Mac and Mia. And Mac and Mia is not a large company. It's a startup company that provides clothing to children, actually. So kind of those subscription model boxes, they will provide them for children, which I immediately found interesting because I hadn't thought of that. But there were some use case scenarios such as family photos that were coming up, and mom wanted to make sure that kids had cute outfits. She works with a personal stylist, tells what exactly they want or don't want. They get a box and then they're able to have something for that photo shoot. Anyhow, she talked about how they are using data analytics at Mac and Mia to provide those business decisions. And what I found interesting was the fact that as a startup, they're able to go and do some A/B testing. So they have a theory, what is going to help people keep more items from a box, for example. And one of the things that they found from the existing data was that it seemed that if more items were included in a box, more items were kept from that same box. And so they decided to test that, and it turns out it held true. So now they encourage their stylist to go and do this. But she also talked about still the need for the human interaction and the need for being able to really mine the rich information that is being shared as a stylist texts their client, has that back and forth conversation, the information that they have yet to glean from all of that that is currently being captured. So even though they're already being able to see a lot and make a lot of really cool business decisions, there is still so much further. And I think that can hold true for a lot of companies. And then we heard from Bill Prisbury from Eastman Chemical, and he shared with us data science being used to help determine and make forecasts in this particular case about the next big chemical that is going to disappear. He didn't share what it was. The joke for those who attended was because he had created this deck and he had put it together, send it through his legal team, and they said, you can't share all this information, can't, specifically all the names of the chemicals that had been involved, included in his research. He assigned them all numbers. And so he had one slide where it was very obvious that there was this one particular chemical that stood out from all the others in terms of the likelihood of it going away. And that chemical happened to be chemical 93. So there you have it. Within the next 10 years, 93 is going to be gone, or is going to be phasing out. But what was tangible from his talk, and I think really interesting, was not just the fact that data science was being used to be able to better understand sentiment and use of current chemicals, but also the fact that, just as in market research, he was finding struggles with data that was being shared, either being liked or disliked by the stakeholders. So imagine, for example, being someone who creates products using chemical 93, being told that within 10 years, the public isn't going to want chemical 93 anymore, and you now need to go find something new to replace chemical 93, that could be a jarring statement, and it can be very difficult to swallow. And I find that that is something that we also experience in any insights function, is sometimes having to deliver that difficult information to your stakeholders and just hope that they pay attention and eventually take action on it. To close out day one, we had a panel on blockchain technology, or as Isaac Rogers from 2020 puts it, peer-to-peer transaction systems. And this was a very interesting panel. For those who were there, I think you will agree, it touched on what is blockchain, which I think, let me just look up the three people that were on this panel. So there was Ted Waz, Paul Nato, and Isaac Rogers. The three of these gentlemen were on this channel about block, or on this panel, my goodness, they were on this panel about blockchain. And Paul did a very interesting job of just describing very basically what this peer-to-peer transaction system is. And as he put it, it's a slow, very large database that nobody owns, but everyone has access to. And this helps generate trust. But it was also clear that this particular technology also doesn't solve everything everywhere, because it doesn't work everywhere. Isaac was talking about how it can hopefully, potentially be applied to help with issues with fraud in survey results, dishonest panel members. But still, it was unclear, at least to me, how exactly that could happen. What was clear to me was, in a system where individuals are the ones who are sharing their information, or at least storing their information in this very large, slow database, decentralized database, that if companies are able to score individuals in terms of their trustworthiness, there is also going to be the ability for individuals to score companies on whether or not their research seemed to be relevant or good. And can you imagine a world where back and forth we have this exchange of people taking surveys, being able to rate a company on how good that survey experience was, as well as companies being able to rate someone on how trustworthy their responses were. So back and forth, it was an interesting conversation. Frankly, again, this is my opinion, I found it interesting, but still lacking in terms of really understanding how this all would work, because it still feels like blockchain is the word that is getting tossed around right now. It's the word of 2018, possibly the term of 2019 for market research and data science. But we'll see if it ends up producing any actual results that we can go back to and have case studies and use cases on how this peer-to-peer transaction system is actually working in terms of research. All right, that brings us to day two. Day two started with Dr. A.K. Pradeep, who is an owner at Machine Vantage and also co-author of a book that is coming out about AI and machine learning. And what he talked about was just breaking down artificial intelligence and machine learning and associated terminology into things that were a lot more tangible. And this was one talk where I felt like I walked away feeling like AI and machine learning no longer were just terms, but they were far more accessible. So for example, AI, he said, was experiential knowledge that is captured, plus heuristics, which he defined as just being rules of thumb, in one place. So he talked about this experiential knowledge and the fact that people who are retiring are walking out the doors with all of this experiential knowledge that we have not yet captured. And somehow we need to find a way to capture that knowledge in a system where we can then apply rules of thumb to be able to make sense of all that knowledge. Machine learning, he said, really is quantified statistical data mining. And then he actually addressed why is it that neither of these two things are the answer to all research, and why is it that he does not feel like either AI or machine learning or automation, all of these things are going to fully replace market research. And that is because it can't yet deal with natural human language perfectly. We tend to speak in metaphors quite often and quite regularly. And that is still something that is difficult to try to teach any system how to understand, because a metaphor can end up meaning a great many things. And how do you teach a system how to suss out which of those many things that metaphor is supposed to explain at any given moment? How do you explain the context to understand that metaphor? That is still something that is being worked on, and that is still something that the human element can still bring. He also talked about how 95% of desires and decisions are in the subconscious, and we can't always find them using machines. We can use machines to help. And he said, this machine learning and AI will help us be more creative than we ever thought possible, but it is still not the end-all be-all to research. Next was Karen Krikorian from Disney. And she talked about, part of her talk was actually talking about market research compared to data science and vice versa. And one of the things that I found extremely interesting that she shared from her experience was, she said in her time at market research at Disney and the years that she spent on that in that discipline at Disney, she never had presented to the CEO. Within her first year of being in data science at Disney, she was presenting to the CEO. And she said, the thing about market research is it doesn't seem to be trusted or as relied upon or given the same weight that data science is. And then she gave this great quote, which was, she was feeling, and I'm going to paraphrase a bit here. She was talking about feeling a little bit cornered in market research and wanting to expand upon that and do something a little bit different. And then she looked at data science and realized that data science, as she said, is market research that guys are doing. And while that was a bit wince-inducing, She also pointed out that there is a gender disparity in terms of data science versus market research. Data science tends to be very male dominated, and market research tends to be very female dominated, or at least have a lot more women in it than there is in data science. So food for thought there. And she also talked about how you need both market research and data science working together to give better predictions and direction to decision makers. After Karen, we heard from Raymond Sueja from Freewheel, which is a Comcast company. And he talked about an in vivo case study of using more data sources to help get better information than from sources that exist already and that have been used for quite some time. In this case, he was talking about Nielsen, and Nielsen data is data I personally have never used, since most of my work has been B2B in this in market research. But he said Nielsen data tends to have a lot of restrictions, tends to be fairly limited in what you can get from it. And so they, as Freewheel, they were able to come up with their own way of being able to get information that they needed to make business decisions. And so basically creating your own source when you find that other sources are limited, which I feel like is one of those themes that was occurring repeatedly throughout this conference, is creating something new when what is existing isn't working for you as much as you would like it to. Next, we heard from Mike Chavaria from Soapbox Sample. And he talked about basically, again, big data doesn't have the full story, and neither does traditional market research. So combine the two to have newer mixed mode methodology. And in this case, he shared an example of using passive data and online communities together to be able to create personas for the travel industry. And so in this case, they used passive data to just take a look at what was being done in terms of search, in terms of actual purchasing of tickets and making reservations, created personas from that in conjunction with using online communities to then check up on the whys behind the actions that were being taken. And so yet again, another case study, another case in point for combining methodologies, combining the data analytics with traditional market research to create richer, deeper, more insightful results. Then came Christy Zolke and Leslie Frakes. Christy Zolke is the founder of Knowledge Hound, and Leslie Frakes works at Whirlpool, leading their data insights team. I loved this quote from Christy. It was, "The future is data, so how do we search data?" And this was an idea that she presented as one of the reasons for Knowledge Hound, which is a data platform that combines all sorts of information, from reports, PowerPoint presentations, to raw data from surveys, and serves it up in a way that then makes that information all much more searchable, so that when you're searching for something, it's pulling from across all of those pieces of information instead of just from one particular piece of data or one particular report or one data source. Whirlpool, Leslie talked about creating access levels to that data and rolling this out in their company, and the fact that the stakeholders actually were able to go into this system, query data, get some faster answers, because as a smaller team smaller insights team at Whirlpool, they just sometimes didn't have the time and would take a week or two to get an answer back to someone. Whereas having access to this database allowed stakeholders the ability to go in, make their query, get some baseline information, which then resulted in much deeper, better conversations, more strategic conversations with the market, with the insights team. And when she talked about how they made this work, one of the things that I took away from this was one of the things that Christy said was treat the rollout of a new technology as though it's a product launch. So create excitement behind it, get people interested in it, and make a big deal about it. Put some visibility behind it instead of just sending an email saying, by the way, we now have this new tool that we're going to be using. And then one of the things that Leslie said they did was they did a lot of training sessions with groups, their primary stakeholders. Teams are now coming to them asking for training because they're hearing about this tool and how cool it is and how quickly they can get some of those easy answers, querying metrics. And from what I understood from this is that both the stakeholders and the insights professionals are excited about this because it is allowing more freedom for both sides. But the other thing that I took away as one of the things that they had done at Whirlpool was requiring there to be a research point of view for every product decision. That was my understanding of what had happened, which then led to an increased need to have that research, which by nature led to these teams having all these questions and wanting to get them answered and going to this database powered by Knowledge Hound to be able to get those answers. But to me, what that spoke of was examining your incentive systems, identifying the behavior you want to change and the incentives that can help encourage that behavior that you want to see. Next was Jason Klein from Listen First. He was talking about their company uses social data, and I found it interesting that he started off by saying that they hadn't initially intended to be in the market research space, but then found themselves there. But they have a social data platform from which they actually have created a brand reputation index. And the cases that he showed were using that brand reputation index to track sentiment shifts towards companies or brand reputation towards companies companies' brand reputations. I'll get that right. Companies' brand reputations during crises, such as advertising gaffes. So one of the things that he shared was Nike's recent campaign and all of the backlash that there was to it. But then looking over time and being able to create this timeline of it was announced, there was fallout from it, there was a response from Nike, and then what happened after that, how did the brand reputation suffer or recover from that? And he was able to show this over a few series, which I found interesting in the sense of being able to just have that information from social data. And one more case of a data source that is very rich, and how can you pair that with traditional market research to create an even deeper story, which he actually said is something that they are working on, is being able to do things like overlay stock pricing with this and overlay metrics that are traditionally being measured with this to try to have that richer story. Then was Tony Cosentino from Capgemini. And he was talking more about the case for market research in an era of focus on AI and machine learning. And really just very basically, AI and machine learning will and do cannibalize some work streams, but there is still a need for traditional market research. And I think, as you have heard me talking about all of these talks already that had taken place, that theme just kept coming back and coming back, that there is a place for both. Neither is cannibalizing the other. They are converging. Like I said at the beginning, hence the name of the conference. And then we closed out with Jenna Lundy from Pinterest. One of her takeaways that I had was that technology has enabled personalization at scale. And she talked about the insights team and their relevance and the relevance of those insights evolving alongside the pinners evolution. So having this parallel journey between those two groups, using the right data to be able to make decisions, such as using search history instead of pinned items to get a better view of what people are exploring. I also love the fact that when they identified what is it that pinners on Pinterest actually wanted to do, it was that they came to Pinterest to explore, to find new things, rather than find things that they already knew. And that actually meant that they needed insights that would help them be able to present the correct data and be able to present the correct type of data or the correct type of pins and information to pinners at an individual level. And that their relevancy was actually showing content for pinners to explore, not stuff they already know, and how this requires continuous feedback since individuals' lives change over time. And so think about how someone, as they're continuing in life, they're going through their life stages, they're going from single to having a partner to potentially having a family to moving to a new area, buying a house, buying a condo, as those things happen a long time, the feedback needs to be continuous about what is going on with that so that the information that is being presented, at least in terms of Pinterest, is going to still be relevant, because the things that a new mom is going to be looking for and is going to be exploring are going to be different from mom of teenagers or mom of children who are in college, et cetera. And that was how we closed out the 2 days at Converge. It was a great conference. It was a smaller group of people, but it was also very interesting, very much that theme of data analytics merging with market research and how they can exist together and work together better as we continue to both move forward in an era of lots of data and still needing to understand some of the whys and human behaviors that drive decisions. Next time, I'm going to talk a little bit about my personal takeaways, more of my personal takeaways from this, and expounding on some of the ideas that were presented at the conference.